You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hello, dear listeners. This is Ginny, and I'm here with our friend Zach Clark.
Hello.
You've heard him before on a few of our episodes, and today he's here to talk about a project he's working on called Great Hope, which you can become a part of and become involved in, which he's going to explain right now.
So Great Hope is a show that I am working on that will be at the UMass Amherst Union Gallery in February of 2018. It's going to be a collection of work that I'm making about where myself and others find hope and victories they are currently celebrating. But the show is also going to exist as an open call print exchange and is open to anyone who makes an edition of 12 works. So if you're a printmaker, I'd love to hear from you to be part of the show. All the work will then be distributed out to everyone as a print exchange. If you are not a printmaker and just want to share your stories about where you are currently finding hope, I would love to hear them. For both participating in the print exchange and just letting me hear your stories, you can go to nationalmonumentpress.com. Some more information will be there. You can find me on Instagram at Zach Clark Is, or you can text 510-969-9443. Thanks, and I hope to have you as part of the show.
Right on. Great Hope. Check it out. From
Art History Bay Briefs.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Ginny.
I'm Jen.
And we are the Art History Babes.
Hey.
Hello, everyone. We're here with a BB episode. A little baby.
Just a baby.
And this is going to be on Japanese woodblock prints, also known as ukiyo-e prints.
Ukiyo-e. You said that very professionally, very authentically.
Thank you.
I believe that that's how it's pronounced.
I hope so. I took a Japanese art history course my sophomore year of college, and I love Japanese woodblock prints. They're one of the first things that I really, really got into in school in terms of art history. So I'm excited to talk about them.
That's really exciting. I think that we've talked about this in past episodes, but
for sure,
we want to start branching out beyond the world of Western art history.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what ukiyo-e prints get exposure for is how they were really influential, especially to a lot of French artists. So like Gauguin and like Toulouse-Lautrec and Mary Cassatt, and like all of that is really interesting, and they did incorporate a lot of stylistic aspects of Japanese woodblock prints, but the Japanese woodblock prints were there before.
Long before.
Any of that happened. So let's get into it. Let's talk about the history of these. So woodblock prints in Japan were first used as early as the 8th century, and they were used primarily as means to disseminate texts, often religious Buddhist scriptures. You know, woodblock prints, you've probably seen them. Maybe you didn't know what they were when you saw them, but they're really kind of everywhere, especially like if you think about, we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but The Great Wave off of Kanagawa by Hokusai. This has been printed on t-shirts. I saw a friend the other weekend, she had it on her t-shirt. It was from Urban Outfitters, so it's, you know, it's out there.
Yeah. It's problematic.
It's on calendars, mugs, etc. But there was a lot of craft and a lot of work that went into these. So in 1765, new technology made it possible to produce single sheet prints in a full range of colors. Prior to that, they were only able to be monochromatic, or if other colors were added, an artist would have to go in by hand and paint other colors onto the print. Some of the first like polychrome prints called nishikiye were often put into calendars, which were for wealthy patrons. So a wealthy patron would say, hey, I want a calendar with, you know, however many views of this mountain or different seasons, things like that. And so the term Yukioe, which means floating world. So Yukioe became the most popular subject for prints. Prints depicting different things from the floating world. Kind of to describe how the Yukioe established itself involves a little bit of discussion about the Japanese class structure. The merchant class were at the bottom of the class structure. And these structures were enforced through like sections of neighborhoods within cities and towns. And so despite their lower status, the merchant class was still a wealthy class, and they focused in their own living areas on life's pleasures, such as theater, tea houses, and brothels. Mm. So this entertainment district became really popular, not just amongst the merchant class, but other classes as well. And so this is most prominent during the Edo period, which ranged approximately from 1603 to 1868. So this is when the Yukioe is really popular and people are going there to visit, and then people are also wanting to purchase prints that are showing kabuki actors from the floating world and famous beautiful courtesans, things like that. These prints were widely popular, and it was easy to produce them in mass amounts because, you know, you engrave a design in a woodblock and you can reprint it and you can reprint it. It's not as expensive as paintings, obviously, so it can reach more people. So, like I said, a lot of the subjects of these prints were people that were living in the floating world. But in addition, it also became popular to depict various landscapes and viewpoints of cities and landmarks throughout Japan. Despite the fame of print masters such as Hiroshige, Hokusai, and Harunobu, just to name a few, each print required the collaboration of multiple people. It wasn't just the artist working on this. So there was the designer of the print, the artist, but there was also an engraver, a printer, and the publisher. So the artist designed print on paper in terms of like drawing it out, and that was then transferred to a thinner piece of paper. And the image of that would then be transferred to a wooden block. And then the engraver carves the outline of the image, and the printer would then apply ink, press it, print it. Publishers were more commercially minded, and they were often also booksellers. So publishers would work with all of these different people, you know, work with an artist saying, okay, we want to make a series of 100 views of Mount Fuji, something like that. And so polychrome prints were made by using different layers of woodblock to be inked in separate colors. And you could go as high up to 20 colors, which is pretty impressive. So this was really revolutionary for woodblock printing. Mulberry paper was often the paper that was used for these prints because they absorbed the ink really well and withstood multiple rubbing, so it's strong, hardy paper. The Japanese really mastered woodblock printing, and the influence of this medium stretched throughout the world well into the 20th century and beyond. Like we mentioned briefly at the beginning, there were a lot of later European artists that were really into Japanese woodblock prints and incorporated a lot of aspects of that into their own work. And a whole thing called Japanese-me developed, yeah. Which we should do another episode on it another time.
That would
time.
Be really fun.
It would.
What's up with that painting? I forget the name of the painting by Vincent van Gogh, but I think that it's called Japanese-me.
I believe he does.
With the geisha, yeah. A woman on a bridge.
Right.
So he painted, in his mind, he painted a print-like, yes. Impressionist work.
Right, which is what they were painting what they saw in prints, which is just interesting. Interesting.
It's fun.
So basically what a lot of these prints did when they were made is they acted as a way of like transporting you into the floating world. Even if you didn't have access to go see kabuki actors or access to see some of the most beautiful and prestigious courtesans in different cities throughout the Edo period, these prints work to kind of like move you into that world, which remained popular for decades and decades and decades. Yeah, so that's the brief overview. And then we'll talk about some specific artists and notable, just a few of many notable works.
The first one here is kind of a serene, more pared down work, yes. By the print maker Harunobu called Courtesan Yutena of the Shinkanaya by a hibachi in 1770. It's from the illustrated book of collected beauties from the licensed quarter. You know, the idea that this is a floating world mm-hmm. is a little bit, I mean, this is my own interpretation, but this kind of very sparse composition, she really does look like she's just floating. Well, the hibachi isn't on anything.
Yeah.
And she's just making a, what is that, a little shrimp? Well,
I'm not sure.
This sort of domestic scene, she's hanging out, making some food, making some tea. This is really representative of the kinds of themes that one would find in a Yukio-e work.
Right.
In this case, this was probably a real woman or based on a real woman. Mm-hmm. So these are real people mm-hmm. that are workers working in entertainment districts. So in this case, a courtesan. So Harunobu was one of the pioneers in the early multicolored woodblock prints and was greatly influential on later printmakers in Japan. Mm-hmm. That's a sweet one.
I know.
I really like it.
There's so much attention put into her clothing and a lot of these prints showing courtesans and beautiful women from the floating world. Like, there's so much attention paid to the style and the fashion.
And the style, the quality of one of these kimonos really indicates where you stand in status
for sure.
As far as being the head gal or just getting started. We discussed The Great Wave off Kanagawa by Hokusai.
Yeah.
I wonder why this is such a popular work. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I think it's really dramatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much movement in it, and I think people also gravitate towards ocean scenes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People like the sea.
Yeah. The sublime. The Great Wave off Kanagawa is from Hokusai's series 36 Views of Mount Fuji. And so in each work, Mount Fuji is figured somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I really like this one too, because Mount Fuji is a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very big mountain.
Yeah.
And in this scene, it really looks so small and far away and almost like the wave is going to engulf it completely. So this is a really amazing print. Hokusai was one of the most successful printmakers in Japan during the 19th century. The wave off Kanagawa was the first and most famous of the 36 prints depicting various viewpoints of Mount Fuji. And because of its popularity, the series was later expanded to 46 designs. And in this scene, it's a pretty chaotic ocean scene, but then the fishermen are shown very calmly navigating these dramatic waves. Good for them.
I
hope they were okay.
They were. They were like such good fishermen. Those little skinny boats would just cut through waves.
Man.
Impressive.
It looks like they would just snap in half.
I would have vomited the whole way.
Getting queasy just thinking about it. One of the last works that we picked out, which actually I was almost going to talk about this print in our holiday episode.
Right. Isn't it beautiful?
It is so beautiful. This print is by Hiroshige, Drum Bridge, and Setting Sun Hill from the late 1850s. It is a winter scene. It's night or about to be night. The stars are out.
Mm-hmm.
We have this bridge in the foreground. Everything's covered with a relatively thin layer of snow. People are holding their little umbrellas, little parasols, shielding themselves from the snow. I just love this work so much. It is from the series 100 Famous Views of Edo. Edo, today's Tokyo, was the largest city in Japan already by the 19th century. Hiroshige was influenced by Hokusai's style and the popularity of series that depicted various views of a landmark or city. So in this case, we have this lovely bridge, lovely scene.
Yeah.
I just love it.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So those are our little BB tips on Yukio-e prints. And eventually, we should do a full-length episode and we can get more into some of the artists that we talked to and more of the subjects depicted. And that's a wrap.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you have a great time.
We really do. From Cabernet to Malnay, they're here to slay the art history babes. What is that, a little shrimp?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.